And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. With you for the next 60 minutes as we'll break down everything related to the New York Giants. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. And we want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, daily fantasy sports destination at DraftKings. You can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. First of all, it seems like it's been ages since we've done a show together.
Well, I didn't do any shows last week because of the mini camp, and I had to be out on the practice field. But yeah,
but
it seems like it's been a while.
Like it's been an entire year that's gone by.
Well, that's why I kicked Tino out.
Yes.
Now I'm back.
Absolutely. Well, we'll get into a few different subjects. Obviously, as John just alluded to, mini camps and OTAs have wrapped up, so we'll get some review on that standpoint. We'll also take your calls. But the theme for today, and we're going to stretch it a little bit with respect to what's going on in the world of sports. Some upsets took place the last time I checked in the NBA last night.
It's the end of June. We got to get creative.
Correct. Exactly. And we're going to get creative with the fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers knocked off, statistically, what was the best regular season record, the regular season team in NBA history. That was the Golden State Warriors overcoming a 3-1 deficit. And it brings back memories of a team that we have an association with here that also knocked off the most impressive regular season team in NFL history, and that was the New England Patriots when they obviously were on the brink of completing that perfect season, and the Giants pulled off, obviously, what can go down still as the greatest upset of all time. So we want to hear from you. You know, in the wake of what Cleveland did, you know, where does this rank? Do the Giants still top the list in terms of knocking off an undefeated Patriots team, or do you think that there's a little bit more credit that goes the way of the Cavs?
Remember this, too. It wasn't just beating the best regular season team. Coming back from a 3-1 deficit. Something a team has never done in the NBA Finals to do it, even more impressive. They won twice on the home floor of a team that lost once there in 41 regular season games. Very impressive.
And they handed the Warriors their first three-game losing streak of the season.
Golden
State had not lost three games at any point during the postseason, during the regular season. Though, you know, it's very difficult in my mind, John, to compare football versus basketball. I understand we're making the comparison because you do have the advantage of a seven-game series. So, obviously, you have an opportunity to redeem yourself, bounce back. Football, it's just one game, one shot. Clock runs out. That's it. There's no tomorrow.
And that's why, to me, an upset in the NBA is actually probably more significant than an upset in, say, the NCAA tournament
or in the
NFL playoffs. Because, look, in theory, if that 2007 Patriot team and 2007 Giant team played 10 times, maybe the Patriots win 8 of those games or 9 of those games. Well, it doesn't matter. What matters is that the Giants beat them in the one game that it counted. And that's what they did. The Warriors had 7 games to win 4. Wasn't just win 1, lose 1. 7 games to win 4, and they couldn't do it, which is great credit to the Cavaliers.
Without a doubt. Now, with that being said, I'm not trying to take away anything from what Cleveland accomplished. You take into consideration a Draymond Green suspension, an Andrew Bogut injury, Andre Iguodala back spasms. That certainly helped and played favorably for Cleveland, though, hey, that's basketball. Injuries are part of the game. You have to adjust and so forth. I still would give the Giants the slight edge, and the reason why I'd give the Giants the slight edge is because some of those factors that I brought up, and I can't overlook them, that I think played favorably into the hands of Cleveland, and I don't know, it's just as great as the Warriors were, because of the opportunities to make schematic changes and so forth, I think it's easier to adapt. Whereas, you know, in football, you have one shot. And you would think with the way the Patriots were playing, how consistent they were. I know there were a lot of nail-biters if you go back to that 2007 regular season. But, you know, the fact that the Giants out-executed them down the stretch where New England had been money all throughout the course of the season, you know, that to me still gives it edge because, you know, sometimes the basketball can bounce your way, turnovers can happen at precarious times and so forth, and, you know, always the best team doesn't necessarily win. You could say that about all of sports, but I think when you're dealing with injuries and you don't have everything lined up in favor of you, I think it does play favorably for the opposition, which was Cleveland at this standpoint.
Well, I think the question you have to ask yourself is what was more impressive a feat? Was it 16-0 for the Patriots, or was it 73-9 for the Warriors? And I think that will dictate which upset you think is more impressive. Because to me, the 16-0 is better. It's
without
perfection.
Without a doubt. I agree with you.
And anything in any given week in the NFL can go bonkos. You know, you fumble a snap inside your own 5. If you go back to, I think it was actually 2007, when the Giants played the Steelers that year. No, that was 2008.
The bad snap
you're
talking about?
Yeah. Their Steelers long snapper gets hurt. They have to bring James Harrison in. safety changes the whole tenor of the
course.
Game. Yeah. 49er, NFC Championship game 2012. Two fumbles on punts. I mean, there's a million different things that can happen in an NFL game that can short-circuit it. That's why I think the 16-0 for the Patriots is more impressive. And why I think, in the end, the Giants beating the Patriots, who, quite frankly, you go by point differential, I think your argument for the Patriots being the best regular season team of all time is stronger than for the Warriors to be the best all-time regular season team. Obviously, statistically, both are. But I think you can make the argument that, say, and I don't strike me down for saying this, it's easier to make the argument that the Bulls from the late 90s, and they won 70.
Wow, can we actually take this part out and put it up on the wall?
Than the Warriors from this year than it is to argue any team was better than the Patriots in the regular season in 2007. Their point differential that year was off the charts. I think they scored 50 twice.
Yeah,
I mean, they were just so good. And that's why I think I agree. I think the Patriots overall were a better team that year than the Warriors were this year. And look, I think the Warriors are fantastic, but I think that Patriots team might be the best regular season sports franchise of all time. You know, right up there with, say, the 27 Yankees.
Well, given the small amount of games, the injury rate in the National Football League, and the fact that it's virtually impossible to really go unbeaten because of all those factors, nothing to me would top a perfect regular season in any other sport. I mean, what the Warriors did, listen, despite the fact that they don't have any hardware to go with it, you know, it's easy to downgrade and make jokes and how the Bulls are the better team and so forth, but, I mean, losing nine games over the span of 82,
that is
tremendous. And it should not be downgraded as a result of not having a trophy.
And look, statistically, they're the best regular season team in NBA history. I'm not going to argue that. How can you? They had 82 games to prove it.
The archives are going to show that, yeah.
They played in the same conference as another team that won in the high 60s. They played in the same conference as another team that won in the high 50s in Oklahoma City. The Clippers were a good team even with their injuries. I mean,
you had some depth.
Absolutely.
And Cleveland was also a very good team overall.
No question about it. And I think the thing that strikes me, Lance, is some of the things that the Giants from 2007 and the Cavs from 2016 had in common and how they won. The special guys made special plays, whether you're talking about Eli to Tyree or Kyrie Irving hitting step-back threes and LeBron being unconscious for two games. I mean, if you're going to win and have those types of upsets – your special players have to do special things.
You need your role players. I think that's a great point. What about even the Dante Joneses and the Mo Williams who came in and the Kevin Bosses who made a big play in the Super Bowl game? I think there's a great parallel, and this is something that certainly we want to continue to talk about throughout the remainder of the program. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com
Farewell.
To watch the remainder of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Beto, John Schmelk with you here on Monday's edition of BBKL. You could get in touch with us here on the phones at 201-939-4513, as well as hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to open up the phone lines. We'll also get to your tweets. Big theme, big question for today's show. What's more impressive, the Cavs overcoming a 3-1 deficit, knocking off the Warriors, or the Giants knocking off that Patriots team that was 16-0? Let's get things started. We've got Russell in Alaska. He gets us going here to start the work week. Russell, what's happening?
What's up, Russ?
Hey, what's going on? A few things. I watched the playoffs yesterday. I say the Giants beating the Patriots. The only reason why, because of that suspension with Draymond Green. It changed the shift of the series.
It's a good point. It's a good point. I agree with you.
I'm not saying it was rigged, but it was kind of suspicious. I mean, you didn't suspend him for the OK City game, but you weren't suspending for the LeBron James stepping over him. You know what I'm saying? But one thing about Golden State, I know I learned from Phil Jackson. He said, if you live by the three, you die by the three. And that was Golden State's problem. All they could do was shoot threes. They couldn't post up. So Cleveland figured that out. Like, hey, y'all can shoot all threes y'all want, but if you can't post up, that's the game. That's what's wrong.
Russell, you know what? Here's the problem, though, too, and the funny thing. The Warriors missed shots in this series that they made all year long. It was just amazing how they picked this moment to go into a shooting slump, and all year they were so good. It was unbelievable.
They got tired. You can just tell by the fatigue. They were just shooting bricks.
And tight.
All Cleveland would do is running back and up the court.
And I think they got nervous, too.
Of course. Well, and also they played hero ball in the last minute, which is ironic considering the teams that they beat relied on hero ball.
And lost them.
Correct. And
that.
It came back to bite them because that's what they resorted to. So a lot of things that were out of character for Golden State last night.
I just got one question. Is it true that the Giants signed another quarterback?
Another quarterback.
Yes, they I'm not sure. Hey, Dave, is that official yet, the Giants' third-string quarterback situation? Yeah, the Giants let go of B.J. Daniels, and they brought in a new third-string quarterback over the weekend to take snaps and compete, maybe for a spot on the practice squad or something like that during training camp.
All right, because I was wondering. I was like, the worst-case scenario. Oh, Ryan, the backup quarterback, what's his name?
Ryan Nassib,
you're talking about. 5 miles. So what I'm saying is Jerry Reese going to make a trade? That's what I kept thinking. Like, is he going to trade this move? Because if his contract ends, you just drafted a quarterback as possibly a starter, but he's not going to start because, you know, Eli's Iron Man. So what are you going to do about this quarterback? Are you just going to just say, I gave him a pick for a good quarterback, hopefully Eli will get injured one day? Or are you going to say, you know what, I'll trade him maybe for some draft picks or maybe for this offensive line? That's what I'm trying to see what's going on. I don't know how Jerry Reese is thinking, but you know he has to fix his offensive line.
Lance, this is your favorite topic.
It's mine.
So I'm going to let you handle it. How about that?
It's really a pleasure for you to hand this over to me. Russell, I think there's a few things you need to take into consideration. Number one, you know, right now it's hard to gauge the market for a player like Ryan Nassib. So you don't just say we're going to trade a player for the sake of trading a player. You want to trade a player because you're going to get something in return. And with a lot of quarterbacks being drafted this year and a couple of quarterbacks being traded and moved and Ryan Nassib still being on the team and not a lot of chatter and interest, I think that's one gauge that he holds the more value here right now currently with the Giants. And who's to say that he's definitely not going to re-sign with this team? I don't think you can necessarily rule that out. I understand you gave up the draft pick, you wanted to move up to grab him, but right now, with not knowing the exact market for Ryan Nassib, I don't think it's a given that once he's able to test the free agent market, he's definitely leaving the Giants. So if you have an opportunity to bring him back, why are you going to all of a sudden be in a rush to trade him when you've been working with a quarterback who knows the system?
And again, you asked the question, Russell, why keep him around if you're going to lose him after the year, is that, quite frankly, God forbid Eli goes down for a month and you're, let's say, 5-3 when he goes down. You know, you want a quarterback to be able to step in and go 2-2 in those next four games to keep your playoffs hopes alive. Go ask the Cowboys last year what it was like when Tony Romo got hurt and they didn't have a competent backup quarterback. Their season ended really, really fast. So, yeah, look, is there a chance that you run into a point where you pick Nassib, he never plays in a meaningful regular season game? Yes, but you drafted him to be a backup. He wasn't drafted as the heir apparent to Eli Manning. They said it when they picked him. They were drafting a good backup quarterback, and that's the role he's going to play this year.
I see what y'all saying, but I remember Anita kept bringing this up. I think he could be a starting quarterback right now. And that's what I was like. I'm wondering, are the Giants going to make that move? Nassib's not going to stay behind Eli.
Russell, I have a simple question for you. Other than beating second and third string defenses in the preseason, what evidence is there that Ryan Nassib is going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL?
That's a good question, but this is an NFL. They just gave Brock Osweiler $72 million deal.
Yeah, but Brock started, but Russell, see, the difference between Nassib and Osweiler is Brock had a number of games, small sample size, I'll give you, but a number of games to show other teams when you put him in a starting spot, you give him talent.
In the regular season.
He can't succeed in the regular season. Ryan Nassib has yet to start one regular season game in his career. He started preseason games. He's appeared in regular season games. He has yet to start a regular season game. And Russell, I've thrown this out on Twitter. I have yet for somebody to come back to me in NFL history to show me a quarterback who played out his entire rookie contract, did not make one regular season start, and then was given an opportunity or even won a starting job elsewhere. If you have a quarterback that you could find, I'll feel free to go back and forth. But nobody has yet to name me a quarterback under those circumstances in which that's played out.
I see what you're saying. I'm just bringing up a scenario. I don't know. You never know. Some NFL teams are dumb. They got Tebow to be a quarterback.
Russell, I'm not ruling it out. Listen, for all we know, you know, three starters get hurt some part of the offseason and opportunities present themselves. I'm facing the facts right now, and I think that's what John was alluding to, too. I'm gauging the market right now, Russell. I'm giving you an answer as the market stands right now. Could something change 3 or 4 months from now? Absolutely something could change, but I think right now he has the most value staying here in a Giants uniform because he knows the scheme and he is great insurance for Eli Manning. God forbid something happens.
Thanks, Russ.
All right, no, you have a good day.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call.
Here's the other thing, too. A lot of times what happens, Lance, the way these backup quarterbacks get a chance to start elsewhere is that an assistant coach from that staff
That's
with
a
backup
goes
will go elsewhere and bring him along. Well, Mike Sullivan's still here. Ben McAdoo's still here.
Yep.
The only guy you can come up with is maybe Sean Ryan, who I believe went to the Titans or Texans?
Texans. He went to the Texans.
Texans. So,
but they already just invested. Speaking of the quarterback, they just invested in Brock Osweiler.
Bingo.
So, you know, I think that's a good point. Listen, the coaching situation could certainly change, but I mean,
and we know McAdoo and Sullivan aren't going anywhere.
Well,
they just got their jobs.
They just got their jobs.
Yeah.
For the sake of stability, I have a feeling that, you know, the Giants are not necessarily going to be making 100 different moves after one season. Yeah, so all those factors have to play out. I mean, the only other guy that I would throw out would be the former Bills head coach, who's now with the Jacksonville Jaguars, the offensive line coach, Doug Marrone.
Oh, Marrone.
Who worked with Ryan Nassib in college.
But remember, though, he passed on drafting him when he came out of school.
That's a fair point. And Jacksonville has Blake Bortles. You know, even if he wanted to put on his 2 cents with the Jacksonville coaching staff, Gus Bradley, hey, we should take a look at him. Once again, they have a young quarterback who they just invested in.
And again, folks, we're not trying to tell you that Ryan Nassib's not a good quarterback. We actually think Ryan Nassib's one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league. We think he'd step in and do a really good job if Eli got hurt. But if you expect another NFL team to come and offer a valuable asset for a player, there has to be some track record and body of evidence to make that trade worth their while. I mean, could you – let me put it this way. Giant fans, knock on wood in this theoretical scenario. Second week of training camp, Eli Manning and Ryan Nassib collide. They bang heads. They bang legs, and they're both out for the year. How would you feel as a Giant fan if you went and traded a second-round pick for a guy that's never started a regular season NFL game that was a backup on another team in the league for 3 years? How'd you feel about that? I imagine you wouldn't be too happy about it.
Yeah. Well, because there's other teams that you could look at previous experience. You don't want to be put in that position. And on that topic, not that we want that hypothetical to play out, because the other quarterback was raised earlier in the show. It's Logan Thomas, who is now the third-string quarterback for the Giants, who's had some experience in the NFL, most notably with the Arizona Cardinals, for those of you trying to keep up with the transaction.
By the way, for teams that are desperate for quarterbacks, there's a guy out there that's ready to be traded that started more than 30 games in the NFL, Nick Foles. If you're a team desperate for a quarterback, wouldn't you be more confident what Nick Foles can do simply because of what did he go like 10-2 for the Eagles 2 years ago?
He went well. His touchdown to interception ratio would just stand out. What do you have, like 24 touchdowns and
two
interceptions?
Yeah,
something like that. That's what
I was thinking of.
The record was okay, but it was the
you're right.
The
that's
touchdown
my fault.
To interception ratio was through the roof.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah, and it was impressive, and that's why St. Louis found that attractive. Unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily always work out. All right,
correct.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got
correct.
Justin in Lakewood. Justin, welcome to the program. What's happening?
How you fellas doing today?
Hey, Justin.
Doing well. How's things with you?
I'm doing pretty good. I enjoyed the show. That's my first time calling.
Well, thank you.
Finally on vacation from work, so trying to take advantage of that.
Appreciate it.
All right. Quickly, first off, you know, the finals was magnificent last night. I thought it was one of the most competitive games I've seen in my time watching basketball.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, but nothing takes my heart away from that Giants David Tyree catch, man. I mean, it just rewrote history, literally, you know. So I think that would take the edge in that conversation, just my 2 cents on that. But quickly, while I have you guys, my remark is about the running back situation. Obviously,
sure.
We have a number of young, talented guys that we have out there right now. Still some time left to prove themselves. But I was just wondering, is it just me? Or if any other Giants fans feel this way, or did it seem like in some situations, in some instances during the season, Orleans Darkwood was actually more efficient than Andre Williams as far as the touches he got and the production he was able to give us? One could argue that if he received more touches, even in place of Andre Williams, that sometimes that he could have been more productive. Obviously, I know he had a few little injury concerns, and obviously he's going through that now, but what's your guys' take on him as far as the competition strictly between him and Williams? And I'll take your reply off the air.
Well,
hey, thank you, Justin.
The phone call. Thanks so much. Statistically, I think it shows.
I mean, I think,
around that.
Yards per carry, I think in the carries he had, he was more productive than Williams. I don't think there's anything about that.
4.3 to 2.9.
Williams is a rather dark horse, a better special teams player. Well, first of all, dark horse to get healthy this year, number one, because he has not been on the field yet this spring. So he has to get on the field first and foremost. That's the most important thing. Number two, I could tell you Howard Cross believes what you do, Justin. He loved Darkwood last year. He was constantly lobbying me. I don't know why he would lobby me, but
well,
he did.
We know how much influence you have.
Yeah, I just snapped my fingers and things happened, please. And, you know, he thought Dark Horse should have gotten more of an opportunity, too. I know the coach there really likes him. He does everything they ask. And when you play really well on special teams, you'll get the opportunity. And I would not be surprised, Lance, if this summer, and I think I said this when I was on the show with you, if I'm the Giants, I give Rashad Jennings a couple carries each game, you get him out. I give Arena a couple opportunities each preseason game, you get him out. Then you take the majority of the rest of the carries for three and a half quarters, and you give him to Williams, you give him to Darkwa, you give him to Rainey, you give him to Perkins. Let the best guys win.
That's fair. I'd like to see every running back get an opportunity to start a preseason game.
I'll buy that.
Because I want to see whether or not, because a lot of people, you know, throughout after watching last season, if you get a guy in rhythm, they're more productive. I want to see if that holds true, even under a preseason setting. I'd like to see them each start a game to see whether or not that's a true difference maker.
The question is whether or not at that point in the preseason, is their stamina to the point where they can show that? Like, are they ready physically to carry it 17 times in a game based on where they are from a conditioning standpoint?
I think it's a fair question. You would think, though, by the time you get to that fourth game,
well,
with
fourth
all
one,
the training
yeah.
camp, it's over. Maybe the first game. So you know what?
Yeah.
I give Rashad Jennings the first game.
Okay.
Since you pretty much know what he can do of all the guys. And then progressively.
Give like Darkwa game three, Williams
and
game
then Williams
two,
game,
whatever.
Or Williams even game four.
Right.
Since he has perhaps an opportunity to make the biggest statement of them
or
all.
Or Perkins maybe. Maybe you want
Perkins
to save Perkins, give
one.
Him a chance to learn stuff, and then give him a game
yeah.
the last one.
Or you can even split. Because, see, Perkins, I don't know if there's necessarily the urgency to see whether he could start.
Yeah, but he's more of a third down
More
type
about,
guy
you know,
anyway.
What type of role
see
you see him in the system and so forth. But I think with Andre Williams and Darkwa, you'd like to maybe see, all right, if we start them and they get in rhythm, is there some substance to that?
I'll buy that.
So, I mean, I don't think there's any harm in doing that. I'm trying to – you think back to last season, John. You know, Darkwa had that standout series against the Cowboys here at home. That, to me, was his breakout game. And then everybody saw them, and they're like, well, wait a minute, you know, why haven't this guy gotten any opportunities? Because, you know, all of a sudden he was exploding through the hole, he got a touchdown in that game, and the Giants were progressively building upon the run. But, you know, there's a lot of factors you also need to take into consideration. The caliber of the run defense that they were going up against.
Sample size, random chance.
Of course. So, you know, that's why I sort of take a step back and I say, once again, this is not to take anything away from Darkwa.
No.
I think he took advantage of his opportunities, and I think you hit it right on the nose, John. His value on special teams, you probably can't even, you know, put that into words at times because he does things that don't even show up statistically, and I think that's going to bode well for him with respect to the competition of this team. But when somebody does that in a small sample size, I think you got to take a step back and put it in perspective. I don't know if it's an indication it would play out for all 16 games.
Agreed.
Let's head back to the phone lines here, and we check in with AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for my call.
Well, thanks for making it.
What up, AJ?
I know, is this the last year of Jonathan Hankins with you, Bill?
Yes.
This is the Giants fight. We signed him to a contract extension.
Will they sign him to an extension? Is that what your question is with regard to Hankins? I mean, I think it really comes down to the Giants' track record and whether or not, you know, they feel they've seen enough from him. Prince, I remember, his option was picked up, but he had an option. So that was a difference.
First-round pick. Hankins was a second-round pick. You don't get that fifth-year option with
Correct.
The second-round draft
So picks. Therefore, with him, you have to give him an extension.
Correct.
But I guess I'm looking at other rookies who were drafted, whether they had an option or were they given a deal before the rookie contract expired.
Well, remember, the Giants haven't had that many rookie contracts
that were
come back.
Correct.
So.
And at the defensive tackle spot, there's the track record of Linval Joseph replacing Barry Cofield. And then Hankins replacing Linval Joseph
and
at
I think,
that position.
See, I think you hit it on the head on your first comment, Lance, is that Hankins is coming off an injury-ravaged season where he missed, what, nine games? What, he played six, seven games last year, Hankins, something like that?
In that ballpark.
So he played – he only missed 9 or 10 games. And quite frankly, in those games he did play in, he wasn't that effective. And he – I thought his play level decreased from year two to year three.
You didn't see the pass.
So why would you go run and give this guy an extension – when you're not sure what he's going to give you. He played
nine games.
Nine games, missed seven. And I think you want to see him come back here and show what he can do because I'm sure when Jonathan Hankins, agent, sits down with Jerry Reese, he's going to say, well, my client got seven sacks from defensive tackle in 2014. Did you see the money Fletcher Cox just got? Now, you know, he's not Fletcher Cox, but he's probably still worth $70 million. You've got to be like, whoa.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was that, AJ?
I said he don't deserve Fletcher Cox money yet.
No, obviously not. And I don't think he's going to ask for that. But the way these contracts are going up and up, Hankins will come and say, you know what, I want to get paid based on my 2014 season, not based on my 2015 season. And I think the Giants wisely need to make sure he's capable of putting up another 2014 season. If he puts up a 2016 that's more similar to 2015, then I think that really gives you a better idea of what type of contract you're going to want to offer him. You know what I mean? Thanks, AJ.
All right, AJ.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Yeah, you want to see if he can get back to that production. Certainly Damon Harrison's arrival, I think, can only help him in that regard. At least that's obviously the goal for the Giants this season. Yeah,
having a Mack truck next to you is usually fairly helpful.
Should give you an advantage.
Yeah,
correct.
A little bit.
I don't think I'm going out on a limb with that statement. But I think you do bring up a good point with respect to, all right, he had a standout 2014. You know, let's see what he can do before you necessarily throw money his way and so forth. And I don't think it's a stretch. You know, people may have cringed when they hear Fletcher Cox. The way the market works, John, whether you think you're in the same ballpark of a player, you always look at the most recent deal given to a player at your position.
Hello, Olivier Vernon.
That's what you do. So it's not as if Hankins is trying to make a statement and we're playing out a hypothetical negotiation.
Absolutely.
But any agent would tell you they look at the most recent deal as the ballpark figure of what they want to get their client.
That's the benchmark.
Yeah, correct.
Now, again, Hankins has not put up near the production of Fletcher Cox, but still. The way the NFL works, contracts go up and up and up. Salary cap goes up and up and up. Contracts go up and up and up with it. It's just the way it goes. J.J. Watt will not be the highest paid defensive lineman forever, even though he stole the best because somebody is going to come after him. I think for a second, Eli Manning might have been the highest paid quarterback. That's not the case anymore.
And then somebody topped him.
Exactly.
It always happens.
Just the way it goes.
Correct. And keep in mind, though, so Fletcher Cox, who is now going to move to defensive tackle, was really getting paid as a defensive end.
Yeah, but a 3-4 defensive end, which is kind of like a
defensive around, yeah. But in their new defense, at least the plan is they're probably going to try to make him full-time defensive tackle. At least that's the anticipation.
And then in a couple years, Aaron Donald's contract's going to be up. He's going to get oogles of money. And, of course, we're still waiting on Von Miller. And I guarantee Von Miller's deal is going to set the new benchmark. Because he's going to get more than Fletcher Cox did.
Well, and this
goes
on and on. But with that being said, it's interesting because you can also look at it from Hankins' perspective. Hankins may also want to wait and see what those other guys get as opposed to jumping the gun.
Well, because he's like, man, if in my fourth year, if I could put up 9 or 10 sacks, look out. I am going to ask for $90 million or whatever he might want. Who knows?
Well, it goes back to the two-way stream. The team may want to lock him up. That doesn't mean the player wants to do it. The player may want to wait things out.
Well, I'm sure the player would love to lock it up at the right number, but
of course,
it's finding that right number is the real tricky part, isn't it?
Good luck trying to find a number that appeases to both.
Right.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. He's John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We also want to remind you it's brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changed the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We have covered a number of topics thus far. In case you're just joining us, theme of the show today with the Cavs knocking off the Warriors. First time in NBA history a team overcame a 3-1 deficit, brought back memories of what the Giants did to the Patriots. Who's the bigger upset in your mind? We're also getting into storylines related to minicamp, OTAs, and so forth. And this is where the turning point of the program starts, and that is when Charlie in Portland, Maine tries to throw his two
cents. I don't have the voice to yell at you today,
you
Charlie.
May want to preserve it.
Charlie,
seriously. How are we doing?
Hey, gentlemen. Hey, John.
Hey.
I hope you're feeling well.
Yeah, you know, Charlie, it was a rough weekend. I came down with a cold like on Friday, and then my buddy had a bachelor party. So
not a good combo.
There you go.
Mixing the chest cold with what happens at a bachelor party, apparently not a very good combination.
Yeah. But, hey, you had fun.
Yes, it did.
Hey, I'll just chime in. Of course, the Giants win over the Patriots was the biggest to me. And the Cavaliers, I mean, I'm glad LeBron won because now they can leave him alone. He doesn't have to answer all the stupid questions. But, you know, just like you were saying, the Warriors had too many injuries. When Andrew, Bogut went out, changed the game. That guy had some good games when, you know, he was getting rebounds. He was, you know, he was hitting his outside shot. When they lost him,
it was a huge loss. Yeah,
boy, how
they lost the game. They lost the series.
And how bad were Azili and Varejao last night?
Especially on the defensive end.
And then they brought Azili back in the fourth quarter. I don't know what the hell Kerr was thinking doing that.
Yeah, Yeah, it was they had too many guys out. So you know, I was glad to see LeBron get it, and like I said, now they can leave him alone. He won in Cleveland, and it's over.
No, but Charlie, but LeBron didn't hit the game-winning shot. He's not good enough to hit the game-winning shot in a game seven. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Well, I think that block was pretty big the last time I checked.
Dude, he came out of nowhere on that. Oh man.
That was some extra effort there. And you know what? And once again, I'm not taking anything away from him, but the first thing I also said to myself when he made the block, if Iguodala's not dealing with back spasm, don't you think he goes for a dunk?
He might.
With his athleticism, I think he'd try to dunk it. That's why I don't think he could overlook his back spasms. But, Charlie, before we let you continue, I mean, we might as well talk basketball more because the rationale that he brings to the table with basketball makes a lot more sense than perhaps when we go in other directions on this show. I mean, you know, talking about Bogut and that hurting them defensively, my goodness, I can't believe what I'm hearing on this show.
Well, maybe he wants Andrew Bogut to play left tackle this year.
Well, we didn't get to that point. Don't give him any school for thought here.
Hey, I have a lot of depth. You just haven't, you know, realized
we haven't
it
tapped
yet.
Into it, unfortunately.
Well, Charlie, in fairness, we know you like football. Now we know the NBA, and we also know about your, like, herbalism.
That's
stuff,
true, yes.
All right?
Well-rounded.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Hey, Lance, I want to compliment on interviewing the lady who was the producer of the O.J. Simpson.
The Made in America documentary?
Yeah, it was a good interview.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I really liked it.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
That was good.
She's following me in other avenues.
Do you want me to put, like, a soundtrack behind this love fest? Come on.
Hey, I just about Hankins. Hankins, I mean, you got to remember, last year Hankins played alongside of Kuhn. So you're not going to have a very good year if you're doing that anyway.
He played he played next to other guys too, Charlie. There are other defensive tackles in the rotation.
Yeah, well, they weren't very good last year, okay? The whole team wasn't very good, so you can't really – but I mean, the defense was horrible, and that was part of the reason. But to me, if you're going to spend all this money on Hankins, which I know we're not, I would go after the guy who's sitting, like, right next door, Wilkinson of the Jets, who wants to get out of there, and he'll probably want to stay in New York. You could probably get this dude. And if you're going to pay a bunch of money for somebody, I think he's a lot better than Hankins is. And I would go after that guy and just bring him in and let Hankins walk next year. And then you got Hankins and you got Snacks. And then you got Vernon and you got JPP. You've got an incredible defensive line.
Charlie, if you think you're affording Muhammad Wilkerson, Jason Pierre-Paul, Snacks, and Olivier Vernon, you are out of your damn mind.
I can only imagine,
year.
Charlie,
I
can only imagine your thoughts about the offensive line with that payroll, okay? And what you're going to have to complain about with respect to that.
Hey, you know, that's the thing. You know, you want to bring in Wilkerson? You can't resign
Hugh. You can't resign this guy.
You can't resign Rich Berg. See you later.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey, look, we can bring in – hey, we offensive line, we got Jake Long. He's saying he's feeling the healthiest he's ever been in the last 5 or 6 years. Definitely can bring him in. There's a strong possibility that Davis is going to be available. This guy, Phil Lohoit of Minnesota, and Jokel, possibility. I don't understand, why is Jerry Reese, when he knows he wants a right tackle, is going after a left tackle? It doesn't make any sense. Then you ask them to play right tackle, plus lowball them for a salary. They're not going to come. So just go after a right tackle.
Well, but Charlie, I don't think there's a crime in pursuing left tackles and seeing if they want to play right. Worst case scenario, they tell you no. What's the problem with that?
Yeah, because the left tackle on the market is the best guy out there.
And now it's going to upgrade your offensive line and so forth. So what's the crime? I just don't see the problem.
The crime is, it's to me, it's just covering his butt, basically, to the fans, saying, look, we're trying. So then you guys can say, hey, they tried. Look, they brought him in. They brought this guy in. We can't help it if he didn't want to play right tackle. That's what I think is going on. I don't think they're really pursuing someone that they could actually get and play on this team. That's my problem.
Well, listen, Charlie, there's been left tackles in the past in NFL history. I don't have a list in front of me who have gone to other teams and have adjusted to right. That's why there's no harm in asking a player. And remember, it goes back to the player. You know, sometimes the player doesn't want to do it, but, you know, the agent says, hey, meet with the team, see what they have to say. You know, that's the part of negotiation. That happens all across the league.
And again, this day and age, Charlie, there isn't as much.
But, I mean, you can't offer them peanuts to do it. You got to offer them the same amount of money that you pay them for being a left tackle.
Well, but Charlie,
that's the problem.
No, Charlie, look, I hear what you're saying, but remember this, too. There's not more now than before. You're getting some pretty dynamic pass rushers over right tackle as much as you are over left tackle. Von Miller lines up over the right tackle. J.J. Watt will often line up over the right tackle. So you need guys that can pass protect on both sides. So if you can find a good player, you bring him in no matter what. Thanks for the time, Cole. We appreciate it, dude.
All right, Charlie.
Okay, guys.
You got it. Thanks, Chuck.
Take it easy. 201-939-4513. And I brought up Russell Okung. We've talked about this in the past. You know, he's an offensive lineman that made the rounds. He ultimately wound up in Denver, wanted to play left tackle. Eugene Monroe, who's still a free agent, is another one based on the rumors who has played left tackle. And keep in mind, he's played left tackle solely in his NFL career. You'd have to go back to college to find times where he was at right guard briefly and elsewhere. So when a player is comfortable at that position, sometimes they just want to stick at that position. So, you know, if the team wants to meet with a player and says, hey, you know, we really like what you bring to the table, but in our system we want to move you to the right side, it's up to the player to determine whether or not they want to take advantage of the opportunity or go elsewhere. But I don't think there's anything wrong with a team saying, hey, you know, let's try to see if we can get a left tackle who will move over to right. You ask the question. If the player likes it, great. If not, you move on to the next thing.
If he's the best guy out there, you try. And if he says no, what's the harm?
What do we always say, John, and coaches even say this all the time, the goal is you want to get the five best offensive linemen out there. No matter how you got to get them out there, you just want to put the five best players out there.
Correct.
If that means that you're going to put three left tackles out there in some capacity, hey, you're going to try to do that. They have to agree to want to play that other position.
You are going to have to monitor Twitter for me, by the way. I have to stay off Twitter today, too. I'm trying to avoid Game of Thrones spoilers.
Oh,
I did not watch it last night. I'm very concerned about it. I heard it was an awesome episode.
At least you're not one who – I don't watch the show. But
I hate spoilers. Oh, they drive me
nuts. I understand the spoilers, but there were also people that I were hearing about, oh, how am I going to handle finding both programs at the same time and watch them? I'm like, did you hear about a DVR? It's this box that, you know, you have connected to the television. I understand you don't want to go on Twitter during the game because you're worried that there's going to be some news on what's happening.
Well, and I was on Twitter during the finals games last night, and I had to be very, very careful.
Because you were seeing things. Here's another question I have.
Well, and here's the thing, and I would have watched it after the game, but the wife was already falling asleep during the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And if I watched Game of Thrones before she did,
so it's a joint show?
She would not be pleased.
Okay, I didn't know what the situation
She would not be happy
with
me.
Some it's a group thing. Some it's, hey, we'll watch it whenever
I honestly thought about doing, like, the fake watch it and not tell her after she went to bed.
And then surprised.
And act surprised when I watched
it
tonight, but I didn't do it.
Your acting's not bad. I wouldn't say it's great. It's not bad. But here's the other thing that I can't get over.
Okay, what's that?
This is a generic question, and we will get back to Giants-related topics, I promise. I watch a show, okay? After I watch the show, if I feel like I want to tweet about it, I'll write a comment. I don't understand people. How can you watch a program and tweet about it simultaneously? Don't you have to focus on the program?
Unless there's commercials.
Yeah, but Game of Thrones doesn't have commercials, though.
That's correct. I would never –
how are you doing
no.
that? Are you actually paying attention to the show? Or are you worrying about how many retweets you're going to
get? Well, see, that's the thing. If you're watching a sporting event, you have timeouts, you have stoppages,
you can do it. I'm not disagreeing. I'm talking about a program
with no commercials.
With no commercials.
I agree with you. You can't.
How are you live tweeting while you're watching that
program? If you're really focusing into it, you should not be tweeting while you're watching it.
Exactly.
Agree 100%.
Okay. Just wanted some understanding and
for
perspective
once,
on that.
Lance Meadow is correct.
Okay. Well, it's rare, but I'm correct.
Happens
it's on the record.
Now and then.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Brian in New Hampshire. Brian, what's happening?
How are you?
Doing great, Brian. What's up?
Good. I just want to say I appreciate the show. I definitely listen as often as I can.
Thank you,
Brian.
You
guys always have great information. Yeah, absolutely. And I hate to say it, but Charlie actually covered some stuff I wanted to talk about, which is kind of scary. But what I don't get is, why they don't think about making the move from Flowers to the left side to the right side, considering he's so young in his career. They have all these guys that are veterans that they're bringing in that have really, like you guys touched on with Monroe, they've really only played left tackle. So it just seemed to be harder for a guy like that to make the move than somebody who's still kind of learning the pro game.
Brian, your logic is sound. I get where you're coming from, but I think the overriding factor here is that they believe when they drafted Eric Flowers, they drafted a long-term solution at left tackle. And this guy is going to man the position and be there for 10 years. And they don't want to disrupt his development, however much it might be disrupted, if at all, by moving him over to right tackle for who knows how many years, depending on what veteran you bring in, and then having to move him back.
Yeah.
I get it, and that's the rationale. Whether you agree with it or not is up to you, and I get, you know, both sides of the argument, but I think that's how the Giants look at it.
Yeah, which I guess makes sense. And, I think he's been solid, you know, really overall. Played through some pain and, you know, had some moments, definitely.
Well,
Brian, it seems like they could use some help.
I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. Here's another thing that I want to throw out to you, building off of what John said. I think what the Giants also are envisioning, in addition to not wanting to move Eric Flowers, Brian, is over the last season, you've built some continuity between Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg, who
yeah.
are all draft picks that you used in the last few years, and you figure is going to be the future of your offensive line. So
mm-hmm.
why do you want to now jeopardize that just to maybe move over an offensive lineman who, you know, you may use for a season, you may use for a season or two, but is not necessarily in the game plan for the long-term future? I think you need to at least take that into consideration as well.
Yeah, and that definitely does make sense. And, you know, the more you guys are talking about it, if they bring somebody in that's a veteran, it's probably going to be a 2 to 3 year solution, maybe, something like that. And I can see that the left side is, you know, like you said, there's continuity there. They want to have that kind of camaraderie or whatever, the communication part of it makes sense for sure. Just a thought I had, you know, it didn't really seem like they, like Charlie said, they keep bringing in all these left tackles and, you know, kind of seems like square peg, round hole.
And by the way, Brian, one other thing I want to bring up too, in, you know, you talk about continuity and things like that. I think one other thing that is, you know, is a legit argument is that, you know, John Jerry started 24 games at right guard over the last 2 years. I mean, he's started a lot of the games at right guard, so him and Weston Richburg have probably developed a pretty good working relationship too. So I really think there is some level of continuity growing in this group, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, and I don't have as much negative to say about those guys. I think that they were hurt a little bit in the early part of the season because there was no run game. So, you know, some of the flaws maybe were exposed a little bit more than they might have been, you know, with a more balanced attack. The only other question I have for you guys is I've been reading a lot about Darian Thompson, and, you know, seems like some kind of conflicting reports. Some people list him as, you know, that center fielder type guy, ball hawk, safety. But then I read a lot about how, you know, his 40 was not quite there. You know, he doesn't really seem like he's a burner type guy. He's more of a downhill hitter, run support kind of guy. So can you guys talk about that a little bit more? Where do you see him? And, you know, does he actually fit the mold of a true center fielder, free safety guy?
Well, I think from what we've seen during the course of the spring, and it's a good question, Brian, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You know, he's shown what I've seen on film from college, where he's that opportunistic player, and I think that when he's positioned correctly, he can make those plays, where he has a knack to find the football. I don't think that we've seen enough, and this is just my personal opinion, and John, maybe you could shed more light, since there's limited contact in OTAs as well as minicamp. It's hard for me to say that I view him as a consistent run stopper because he really hasn't been put
no
in a
idea.
Position where he could do that. But I think from what I've seen, just from being in a position to make plays deep down the field, I think he can carry over, and what he did in college could certainly translate to the NFL. And remember, you know, there's a lot of chatter, John, that Landon Collins is more efficient closer to the line of scrimmage. So if they do hypothetically group those two together, I actually think it would be a good compliment because then Collins could play a little bit more close to the line, and Darian Thompson could be your center fielder.
Yeah, and one hit on Thompson coming out of school was that people were unsure about his tackling. It was a little inconsistent. Obviously, you're not tackling in practice in the spring. And you're not really doing that much in the summer either, to be quite honest with you. So until I see him tackle in an NFL game, it's hard for me to judge that. And that has a lot to do with how he'll do in the line of scrimmage. That's number one. Number two, no, he didn't have freakishly athletic combine numbers. But I don't think you have to be a great free safety in the NFL. I think more important than speed, to be quite honest with you, is instincts. And reading the quarterback, understanding where the ball is going to go, knowing how to take proper angles. Those types of things can overcome a lack of a 4.45 40-yard dash. And I think those are the things you like about Thompson. Lance mentioned ball hawk. Instinctual is another word I've heard a lot. Smart. Knows where to go. And I think
even without great speed, if you can do those things, I think it makes you a pretty good free safety that can play that single high center field position.
Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, 201-939-453 is the telephone number. We're going to get back to your phone because I just want to work some tweets in here, John. Some people weighing in about that Giants-Cavs debate. This is an interesting point. This comes from Ed at End85. The Giants win greater. We had no player equal or close to LeBron on our roster, thus making the Cavs win lesser for me. So he's going the roster comparison, which is what you also touched on earlier with similar role players, unsung heroes that the Cavs had in the Giants. But he's claiming the Giants didn't necessarily have that total great all-time player
on the roster. Well, Eli wasn't that guy yet.
Not at that point.
He wasn't that guy yet, but he did make some of those special type of plays in that game that you do need from your best player. And he was their best offensive player, made some special plays. Their best defensive players did make some special plays as well.
But it was more of a unit as opposed to maybe one guy. I mean, granted, Justin Tuck had a standout game. But
yeah, but Strahan did well. Orsi did well.
Everybody contributed.
Jay Alfred had the big hit.
Yeah.
You know what? I buy that. LeBron James, and in the NBA, though, too, one great player makes a bigger difference in the NBA than one great player does
superstar
in the
NFL. Superstar-driven league. No doubt about that. Because then you can build the rest of your team around that guy.
Yeah.
Plus, there's limited roster spots.
There's only five guys on the court at once,
so
as opposed to 11.
The importance of having a superstar is that much bigger.
I think that's a good creative point, though. I like that. Good
job. I agree. This is on the Giants here. Ben at Gruen. Ben, weren't the Giants the number one rush defense for the first quarter of the season last year? Hankins, big part of that. They certainly missed him lots with that regard. No doubt about that.
No argument.
We were focusing on the pass rushing ability, but Hankins certainly helped
because
you stop the run.
Generally, the pass rush and the sacks, that's what's going to get the guy
the money.
Big-time contract.
Correct. That's what's attractive to the agents.
Unless
so
you're a guy like Snacks Harrison, who's like the best in the league at it, and he really didn't have a lot of sacks, but he got paid this offseason.
You're the standout,
obviously.
And we'll certainly get to more of your tweets as we move along. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines. Dre is in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
What's up, Dre?
Hey, what's up, John? Hey, Lance, how's it going?
Doing well, Dre. How's things with you?
Hey, it's coming in. It's hot in Atlanta.
Oh, it's hot here, too.
Get out the way.
We can relate.
Well, I wanted to talk about the running backs. You know, I hear everybody want to compare Darquard to Andre Williams. I think they have two different skill sets. I think Darquard's skill set is more geared to kind of like Jennings with a touch of Vereen. And Williams is just the power back. We have ample sample size in his rookie year of his power. Once he understands the game and hits the holes hard, you know. And I think last year was just, you know, I think it was an anomaly. I think if he's given opportunity, I think he will show. If Darquard can't stay healthy, then it's a new point of whether or not he's better than Williams or not. I think this year we're looking for health. If you could stay healthy and produce, you know, with those two combinations, health and produce, you will be on the 53. That's a good segue into my next one in reference to the tight ends. You know, you have a draft pick in Jarrell, you know, in Jarrell Adams, and then you have an undrafted free agent in Lacoste. If they both play special teams, they're both good blockers, they both have good hands. But if Lacoste can't stay healthy, he can't get on a 53. Now, my question to you guys is, from what you've seen, I understand there's no from in reference to aggression, placement, you know, and attacking the ball when it's in the air between Williams, Darquard, well, can't even say Darquard because they haven't been on the field, Williams and
Rainey
and the tight ends and Rainey, you know, who between those two, who do you think have a better chance, even though Williams is a draft pick, who do you think has a better chance of, you know, actually shining through and making 53 barring injury?
So we're talking about Williams, Darquin, Rainey?
What do you want to talk about the tight ends?
I lost you, Drake, because you threw a lot of positions. Oh. Who tell us who we're choosing between.
The first one is going to be your running backs, and then we'll get to the tight ends after
So the choice is, out of those three running backs, you're saying one. Pick one out of those three. And then are you talking about then for the tight ends, Jarrell Adams versus Matt Lacoste?
Correct.
Okay. So in terms of the running backs for those three.
If I had to bet. And I think it's a really tight one, to be honest with you. I think they would go with Andre Williams because he's a different type of back than the other guys on the roster. He's that big power guy.
And
Jennings can kind of do that, but I think Williams is unique in the type of runner that he is. But in order for him to make it, he's got to prove it in the preseason games. If he doesn't show you in the preseason games he can do it, he's not making the roster, but I think he will.
Well, but here's the other thing, and to play devil's advocate, Rainey and Darkwa have special teams value.
Yep.
Okay, Williams doesn't necessarily have special teams value.
Now, I agree.
Jennings gives you special teams value.
Well, and that's why I think Williams has to play well in the games to make up for that.
Because
he's
not contributing in other facets. I would agree with John. I think under those circumstances, Williams needs to show that in that one facet, which is the running game, he could be a reliant guy, consistency he shows. He could even prove that he could catch the ball out of the backfield, because you're sacrificing a lot in my mind, Dre, by saying no Darkwa, no Rainey, knowing what they can do as running backs and specifically what they could do on special teams, especially in coverage. Forget the return game. We're talking about running down the field and making tackles. You know, that's where Darkwa's value is. So, you know, this is then a show-me type of preseason for Williams under those circumstances.
Right, because Williams do play special teams also, but he's more or less of a blocker. He's actually made a good block that sprung, Harris for that punt return touchdown. Also, he had a good block in reference to the kickoff return. So, I mean, he's a blocker. He's not necessarily a gunner and running downfield, making tackles, but he's definitely a good blocker.
That's fair enough.
And
that is a fair point.
Fair.
When you're the third running back, you're going to have to play special teams. And it's funny because even Tom Quinn, when he spoke to the media recently, they were asking about Jeremy Davis. And he was saying Jeremy Davis is still transitioning to become a special teams player. He's learning because he wasn't asked to do that much at UConn. And Tom said, hey, listen, when you're the fourth or the fifth wide receiver, you're not running a lot of reps and routes as a wide receiver. If you're going to dress, you're going to get a uniform, there's no ands, there's no ifs, there's no buts. You're a special teams player. It's a must. So you're right. Andre Williams contributed. I'm just saying, from what I've seen, I think Darkwa's got more of a track record in that department.
Dre, we got to run, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Jay.
I want to get these two guys in before
Absolutely.
We say goodbye.
Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
How you doing, Len?
How you doing?
Doing
How you
well.
Doing?
How are
doing
you? Well, Len.
Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling in.
Lance, just a comment you made early in the discussion about Hankins. I think it was one of the first callers who asked about the chances of Hankins getting a second contract. And you started out your response by saying, given the Giants' track record, And I guess you're referencing some fairly high draft choices, like Griffin, Cofield, Linville Joseph, who didn't get the second contract.
Who played the same position as Hankins.
Yeah, who played the same position and didn't get the second contract. I'd be surprised if Hankins got another contract. I know it's a little early to say that. Maybe he has a great year, especially, next to Snacks, but it's not, as you said, it's not. If you look at their track record, they're looking for a defensive tackle in the draft next year.
Well,
and hope that they can get a year or two more out of Bromley, and then this guy takes over for a year or two, and we're kind of in that pattern.
Well,
I'm sorry, you were going to say.
No, I was going to say, I don't think what you said is a stretch at all, but I think that if you look at the two other previous defensive tackles who were replaced, they did go the route of the draft, and they obviously felt that what they got out of the draft could easily replace those commodities. Bromley could be the guy. He would be the next guy in line, and he would probably replace Hankins under that track record. But, again, I think it depends on what the team sees in him and whether or not he takes a step in his progression this year, so that you feel in the event we part ways with this player, we know we can at least get what Hankins brought to the table at the bare minimum.
And then, unlike the year when Linval became a free agent, the Giants are in a much better salary cap position now than what they were then, which might change the formula as well.
More flexibility. True. That's a good point, yeah.
Of course, with Linville, it's still somewhat of a head-scratcher to me. I'm not sure what else you would want out of a defensive tackle that you weren't getting out of Linville. But that's old territory. We can stay away from that. It's still, for me, a little bit of a head-scratcher. You know, what didn't the guy do?
Not understandable. I hear you.
Yeah. On Bromley, the Giants must be expecting something. Chris, we traded up in the third round to get the guy. I mean, we must have seen something there.
I don't know. You know what, Len? I don't think the Giants traded up for Bromley. I think they just picked him in their spot.
Okay. I'm doing that from memory, and I'd have to check that. I thought they traded up for Bromley.
I mean, he was the 74th overall pick. I don't think they made a swap.
Well, Len, honestly, either way, whether they trade up or not, a third-round pick is still a third-round pick, and they're going to want something out of him.
Yeah, okay. Now, and let me talk about Bromley and Montero Hughes for a second. Last of the OTAs and in minicamp, I understand they were not active. They were either on the side or inside. Paul would say, I'm getting worried a little too early.
Bromley was practicing, I thought.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Bromley was practicing, but Hughes has been out.
Hughes was the lower leg injury.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, and I thought they had listed during minicamp, I thought they listed Bromley that way also.
Did they?
I'd have to look that up. I don't remember seeing him on the list.
Anyway, go ahead, Len. It's fine.
Yeah, okay. Let me move on. One more point. Let's try to play with some numbers here. And I'll keep the numbers simple. If Eli completes 400 passes, 100 to Beckham, 100 to the running backs, 75 to the tight ends, can we get 125 out of the rest of the wide receivers, assuming Cruz is healthy?
Well, if you go by last season, you're talking about 400 completions for Eli Manning?
Yes, 400 completions.
He had 387 last season, and keep in mind, you know, Beckham missed the game. You had no Victor Cruz.
Okay.
My answer would be, I would think with more health, with more talent on the field, I don't think that's asking for too much.
All right. So, if I broke it down the way I did and then said out of Cruz, Shepard, Harris, miscellaneous, anybody else that we throw in there, we can get 125 more out of those guys?
I think you're going to be around that number. I think it'll be close.
Okay. He had 387 last year.
He had 387, yes.
387, and he threw what?
618. 618 he threw. Yeah, okay. Right on the money.
All right, off by two.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, well,
now,
good.
Here's the flip side, though.
That's what I'm kind of looking for.
Well, Len, listen, we want to try to squeeze in another caller. We appreciate the phone call.
Yeah,
thanks a lot,
Wayne.
One other thing, though, that could maybe throw an obstacle in the way of getting to the 400 completions as Len threw out, and this is under the assumption that if your defense improves, you're maybe playing with the lead, you're running the ball better.
Right.
He doesn't have to throw it nearly as much.
Correct.
So, honestly, while I'm putting the logic, more talent, health, you should be able to get to 400, I think the goal for the Giants is more balance on offense.
Right.
He's not throwing it 618 times.
No, last year, the Giants had 392 pass attempts, and they had 403 rushes. That doesn't count sacks, though.
I think while those numbers are not extremely separated on opposite ends of the spectrum, ideally, if you're playing with the lead and your running game is more effective, there's no reason why you won't put him in that position.
Looked at the wrong column. 623 attempts as opposed to 403 rushing attempts. So you're looking at 60-40 split.
Yeah.
You probably like that closer to 55-45.
They want to bring that
57-43, something like that. All right, final call.
Let's head to New York. We don't have to go too far. Rudy is standing by. Rudy, what's
happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Rudy. How's things with you?
I'm good. I know you guys are pressed for time. I'll try to make it as quick as possible. I don't get to call often.
No problem, Rudy. Go ahead.
But I'm definitely a big fan of you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in.
Really quickly, before I get to my points, my bold prediction, and, you know, I'd like to put my name on that wall.
Oh, it's going
up.
The
other Hall of Famers. 11 wins this year. Playoff run, definitely Super Bowl.
Whoa.
And I say that because of the amount of energy that's in that locker room right now, the positivity that's going on, everyone's coming back from some of the health. I know we don't know, you know, 100% how everyone's doing, but, you know, between all of the positive, and I love Todd Coughlin, one of my favorite coaches ever of all time, but, you know, I think the energy is definitely different from what I'm seeing in the press and all that good stuff and how everybody's acting. So I think it's going to be a good year this year. So that's my prediction.
Okay.
It's going on the wall.
All right, awesome. Thank you. Now, just make a quick point. In order to make my point, I just have a quick question to ask you guys. Who's the actual legitimate backup for Eric Flowers?
I would honestly, it's probably Newhouse. If Flowers went down, I would think Newhouse would be the left tackle, right?
I would probably say that.
And then maybe Pugh?
Pugh, they could probably move over. The only other guy that I'm throwing out as a wild card here, and it all depends on what he shows in training camp. Well, Hart could be one, or what about Stingley?
Yeah,
the veteran
be.
Who's
yeah.
from Tennessee, who's had some tackle experience. I'm just going to throw him out. But I would agree with John Rudy. I think it would be a matter of moving a Justin Pugh or moving a Newhouse, somebody who's already a starter.
I remember Pugh did play left tackle in camp last year a little bit, as a just in case.
And when Flowers missed the game against the Redskins, didn't Pugh move back outside? He did.
Did he play left
tackle?
I believe
Pugh was moved back when Flowers missed the game against Washington. I think Pugh moved back out to left. So that seems to be the same plan, and that would be in place.
Right, and that's my point. You know, everybody's getting worried and, you know, beefing with Jerry about bringing in, you know, left tackles, but we don't have a legitimate left tackle for Flowers if he goes down. And we don't want to move Pugh to left tackle, even though he did a decent job. We want to keep, as you guys would say, the continuity on that line and leave him where he is. Yes, I get it. We need a right tackle as a starter. I get it. I hear it over and over. But the reality is we do need a backup for Flowers. Because if, God forbid, he goes down, I mean, granted, he's a workhorse. He works, plays with injuries. But you just never know.
Well, but Rudy, let me throw this out to you. In the event somebody gets hurt like Flowers, going with your hypothetical, I think continuity at that point takes a back seat, where you have to say to yourself, we just need to put the best player in that left tackle spot to protect Eli Manning. And Justin Pugh, the fact that he's played there, he has experience, I think you just feel secure. We put him there, we sacrifice continuity, we slide somebody into left guard. That would be
the right way to go. I agree with you 100%, but what I'm saying is if we were to bring in that left tackle – hello, can you hear me?
I hear you. We're still here. Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. If you guys were to bring in another left tackle is what I'm saying, and he's a legitimate backup, you know, who started in the league and is a veteran, then you don't have to worry about bringing it, you know, moving anybody on that line.
Listen, and that's an ideal. That's an ideal situation. You're right. Where, hey, your left tackle goes down, you move in another left tackle, and there may be somebody on the roster. You know, like I threw out a Stingley. He's got experience at tackle. For all I know, you know, he may establish himself as the backup. But right now, and based on the track record of the Giants, and John just looked it up, Rudy, it was as we both said. Justin Pugh did move to the left tackle spot in the game that Flowers missed last season. I think right now they probably would feel more secure using somebody currently within the starting five as opposed to maybe turning to somebody on the bench. But remember, there's a new offensive line coach. He's got a new perspective. He's got a new voice. Somebody could very well emerge in camp. And, Rudy, listen, appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much.
One last thing, if you don't mind.
Sure,
real fast.
Just to say a quick point about Nassib. I think they're just bringing in that third quarterback just to kind of relieve some of the snaps from Eli and Nassib. I mean, you don't want you know anything happening in camp. You know what I mean?
Correct.
I think that third quarterback is just, you know, relieve them from taking some snaps. That's all.
Absolutely agree.
100%.
Rudy, we're with you 100%. Thanks, man. Appreciate you calling. Thanks for being a loyal listener. Good stuff.
If you recall, just real quickly, they brought in Josh Freeman when Eli Manning had ankle surgery that offseason, and the whole point was to spread the reps around. So the Giants have done that before. That's not necessarily a surprise. I think Rudy is right on with respect to that. Well, that is going to wrap things up for us. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. John and I will try to answer back any of the tweets that we did not address. You can certainly continue to interact with us using hashtag GiantsChat.
No, not today for me.
Yes, of course. He'll have a little bit of delay because, you know, God forbid we spoil Game of Thrones. It could be the end of the world. But with that being said, Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday this week. And we'll have full coverage all throughout this slow period. We'll try to obviously start previewing some of the upcoming opponents this season for the Giants and so forth. But you can always stay tuned right here to Giants.com. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. And for all the latest, stay locked to our website, Giants.com. Have a good one.